another edition of WTC. We Talk Comics is back, now featuring more geek. With me this week, the master of the figure four leg lock and the cross-faced chicken wing, Brett. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm not too bad. I love chicken wings.
You do. And, of course, we have our own twittering fool, Keith. How are you?
I'm doing great. This week, New 52 number 2s came out, and I did not read all of them. It was brilliant.
That's a great move. And, of course, we've added an idiot savant on all things pop culture where geeks are involved. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome there, Mo. How about you guys? Oh, we did rearrange.
I am, as Chris said, I am Mo. I'm just an idiot. No savant needed. And we're here to talk 52 Fallout, because that is, of course, we thought we were done with the bastard, and we're not. So why don't we get right into it, and what do you guys want to go with, sales figures or some of the reviews here?
Well, we got some, we don't have unit sales, but we do have the top 100, was released just a few days ago. And no big surprises in the top 10, but Batman came in at number 1. That's the Scott Snyder, and thrilled that a book of that quality came out of the top number. Action Comics as number 2, Green Lantern, then Flash, then Superman, rounding out the top 5.
Ahead of Detective Comics, Action Comics, these things you're saying.
Yeah, Batman Action,
George
and
Perez,
then Detective Comics
Grant
number
Morrison.
6.
Nice. Nice. All right, well, you know what? I think it's very interesting. I guess Batman is still I would say Batman is the top property in all of comic books. Chris, would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially since Morrison has taken over. He put interest into a character that was going a little bit stale. They've got a successful movie franchise. He's number one as far as anything goes.
Either of you two disagree with
that? As far as DC goes, at least.
Well, I would say overall he is. Either of you two disagree with that?
Well, you know, I came into this wondering why we needed 4 Batman titles. But with all 4 being in the top 10 for September, the market has spoken. They're willing to buy 4 titles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean he's a great character. He's one of those characters that almost anybody can relate to in that regard. And so I definitely think that he probably does stand out. I mean, I still think it's shocking that maybe that Superman isn't number one overall. Like, I'm pretty surprised that Action Comics didn't come in. And I think maybe it is because of the overall quality that Batman offered versus
Well,
Action.
No, because all 4 of the top 10 made it in. So,
we know the quality wasn't.
The Dark yes. Knight would not have been in there.
Oh, that's true. That is
so
true.
So let's keep that in mind. I think I would say he's the top. He's the top property in all the comic books. I'd go X-Men number 2, Spider-Man number 3, personally. But I don't know. Unless you would consider a Scott Pilgrim in there, you know, because obviously he's a hot property right now as well. So let's talk here. What are the bottom of the top 52? What are the least selling books there, Keith?
OMAC.
And is there a green in there somewhere?
OMAC is the bottom. I'm just glancing at what number it came in. It came in at number 82 out of the top 100. Mm-hmm. So OMAC is the bottom. Keep in mind that these first issues outsold so much. So we won't know for a couple of months what the effect of everyone who bought the first issue of everything. So we've got OMAC at 82, Men of War at 81, Static Shock at 80.
Static Shock was that low?
Vampire at 78, and then Blackhawks at 77. So there's a lot of books that are within a few index points of each other. I would expect those will turn out to be really close in order numbers.
Interestingly enough, Static Shock is the only one that I did never really bother finishing. Because, I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised that they released it. I'm not surprised that it sucked in sales, because I'm just surprised anybody cared.
I would think there would be more people who would know what the character Static Shock is, because he had a cartoon that was a good quality again, than, say, no OMAC, you know, or something like that. And obviously we've seen that the idea of just a vampire book existing, you know, all of a sudden doesn't increase sales. Just the idea that you're going to have a vampire book is not enough, obviously.
I'm going to interrupt here, just because Static Shock, they released it because his creator just died. that is the entire reason he was included in this relaunch.
I don't know if that's really the case. I mean, they would have done Icon if that was going to be. I think it is the recognition of that character. And, I mean, it is a bit of... He's the only Milestone character that's turned up, and part of the relaunch was to roll in the Milestone characters.
Okay, well, then let's talk about some of the other books. Just get this idea out there. I understand Justice League is the number one selling book of the year for DC so far, and Batman then is number two. And that Justice League has clocked in at just over 200,000 units sold at this point, whereas we say Marvel Civil War number one, 500,000. So even though we talk about how great these sales are, but all these books have sold through. Now they are offering reorders on them, and with the reorders coming in, I understand Justice League's reorders was in place of what, number 44, I think, as top sales for
44 is correct
for September. So it continues to go really strong. With everything selling out, we're not going to get apparently a lot of returns, which is what DC was fearing going into this, was that there was going to be a lot of returns because they had shipped so many units and they were offering returns on these books. Brad, what do you think about that?
Well, having just been to a couple of comic book stores and noting the volume of books that they're stocking, I think a lot of the stores are going to wind up stocking extras of these books, and I don't think they're going to return because of the sales so far. So I think maybe people are, even though they're on like third printings, I think a lot of the stores may hold 10 copies on the shelf anyways, which I don't think they would do in most other cases.
I want to talk about something here, and this is something I want to take Keith to task for a little bit. Because he talked about the sales, he talked about people coming in, and they're talking about how more people have come back. Statistically, because trade paperbacks are down, comic book sales this year for September were only up 1% from the previous year, when Scott Pilgrim was going so well, and books of that nature. So what do you have to say about that and your belief that this stunt worked and it's what they needed to do, and they weren't just trying to choke out all the independents and such?
I don't know. I still don't think there's any goal of getting rid of independents. I mean, they need to grow the market entirely. Now, it did grow, even if it is only a point. The reality is that every other year we've had a couple of points drop. So... If they haven't stemmed the tide enough yet, then there's still work to be done. But at this point, it feels like stopping the bleeding is what has to happen.
Yeah, well, I will say this, even though I wanted to take you task on it, two things. Number one, I think Neil Adams is much smarter than you. And number two, and he is. But also, I guess the economy, people actually spending cash is down a little bit this year from last year. So 1% increase. We can't completely throw it away, but I just think that everybody's talking about the great success of this. My belief is we won't know the success of this. Everyone's talking about the success of where the books are selling 1 year from now. I think the success will be, where are these books in their trade paperback sales when they're collecting 4 to 6 issue runs? Chris, what do you think about that?
Well, those sales aren't included at all because that's through other distributors.
Well, no, those are. But what do you think? Do you think that any of these books, the 52 that you read them all, do you think any of these are going to make good trade paperbacks that are going to sell? I mean, they're collecting all the number ones.
They're collecting all the number ones, which is ridiculous, the hardcover. But so far I haven't seen a story arc that's going to make a decent trade at all. It's going to really hurt trade paperback sales.
I kind of agree.
But they don't really need it. They've got enough reprints. We still have to get new Krypton out there into trade paperback.
We don't really have to.
Well, there's a good question, though, and this is something I've been thinking of. Now, for years, the DC particularly has been writing for the trade paperback, and they say they're trying to stop that they're writing for the issue, not for the trade. But what happens to arcs like New Krypton that are now out of continuity? How does that affect the sales when it, quote-unquote, doesn't matter anymore?
Hmm. That's actually an interesting concept. Brent, what do you think of that?
I mean, I think that... I think that in cases like this, it's going to affect the sales. I mean, you can't do something so major without some kind of fallout, especially when there is no, seemingly no obvious plan for maintaining everything.
Seemingly.
Like, there's so much, yeah, there's just so much of a mess going on that I just can't help but, you know, like, okay, why would you do this if you're going to relaunch everything immediately? But it doesn't make sense to me. I don't think it makes sense to you guys, but I think that's the biggest problem, and that's going to be some of that fallout that, that we're gonna have to, well, that they're going to have to kind of, you know, get over that hump before they can really be on the road again.
Yeah, I think that if you say this person has $100 a month to spend on entertainment, and they were spending $100 of that previously on comic books, they're probably not spending 120 now just because of this relaunch. They're probably just going to still spend their 100. It's just maybe now they're going to do issues instead of trade paperbacks, but who knows? I do want to know this. So you still have the sales figures in front of you, right, Keith?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So we had Justice League as the number one selling book. So if Justice League is the number one selling book, where does Justice League International, who is, of course, does it ride any of that momentum? Where does that sit in the rankings?
It definitely came up in the top half, number 24 out of 100.
Okay.
Keep in mind these are September numbers, so Justice League was an August
book. Was an August book, yeah.
So Justice League International, number 24. Dark is quite a bit lower than that.
Well, that's because...
Oh, no, actually, Dark is ahead of that at 20.
Really? I thought Justice League Dark wouldn't sell so good because Justice League Dark, not a single African-American character. And I felt that it was false advertising. You know what else? Where did Red Lantern sell?
Red Lanterns.
Because you said Green Lantern was top
five.
We're Green
19,
Lantern Core.
19.
Okay, Red Lantern was
Red Lantern sold at 19. Red Lantern's 19. Green Lantern Core, 14. Green Lantern, 3.
Green Lantern, 3. What about Green Lantern and New Guardians?
New Guardians, 11.
11.
So that'd be the strength of Kyle. Not a huge, huge difference between the numbers on New Guardians and Core.
Okay. Well, the thing about Red Lanterns was... not a single Native American. I really, again, disappointed. And guess what joke I would have made if they had done a Yellow Lanterns book?
We're going to get letters.
It's a horrible joke. Flat out horrible joke.
All right. Okay, what do you want to talk about here, Brett? You want to talk about some of these statistics you have for the popularity or the voting on the quality of the books of fans? Or Keith, you want to talk about some of Chris's dumb choices, like bagging OMAC?
Hey, I will fight anyone on OMAC.
I can take
OMAC's it. OMAC's awesome.
You know... Mo texted me the other day to tell me that Chris had put a bag on OMAC, and I said, you know, way back when Chris was a customer of mine working at a comic store, I'm pretty sure he was the only customer I was selling the Topps Kirbyverse books to, which is exactly what I called that book. So hey, he is the target market.
Yep,
hey,
nailed that target.
It had Kirby-esque art. It was a little cheesy, but it was good.
Good.
If by good you mean crap, then yes.
OMAC, crap.
Well, maybe before we get to the summary, the final report cards, maybe we should just get the top three, bottom three from Chris.
Yeah, Chris, give us your top three and bottom three. And why?
Sure.
And your overall thoughts
top
on the whole thing.
Top three? Well, the top three, the first two in my top three, you guys aren't going to argue with Animal Man and Aquaman.
Well,
and then you're going straight to OMAC.
They'll argue with Aquaman. I also loved Aquaman, but the other two, I mean, Brett, you had it as a burn. Actually, you both had it as a burn, didn't you?
I did not care for Aquaman, that's true.
I mean, I would burn your copy because I didn't like it that much.
Really? And then I had it as a bag. I thought it was on my top three as well.
Well, it was a good relaunch. And actually, I got some. I was expecting nothing out of this book, and I was actually interested to see where this was going.
Okay.
That's all you can really expect out of a first issue.
Okay, and Animal Man, which is one I guess we all bagged then, which is fairly remarkable.
I do have a little criticism on Animal Man that it reminded me of the Jamie Delano run on Animon after Morrison left.
Ah.
It was like, felt a little bit like a retread. But that said, nobody read that run other than me, Keith, so who cares?
Keith looks like Keith jump in.
I read that right to the end, and a lot of people have been comparing it to the Delano, but I don't know how many of those people read to the end of the Delano issues. Where he went, you know, he had mutated Animal Man into some kind of eight animal giant monster thing. I think it fits better with maybe the early part of the Delano run, but it clearly to me isn't a continuation of that run.
Well, it's the first issue, so.
Well, I don't think this is the girl that had a cult named after her.
Well, Max's cult. We could be heading that direction. I mean. We haven't seen that yet.
I'll tell you this. Brett, did you read the Delano Animal Man?
I don't remember it if I did.
I didn't read it. But having read...
He's probably fine. Just lift it.
Having read Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, I don't trust that that the guy who ripped off Hellboy isn't ripping off Delano. So... okay, well that's interesting. Okay, Chris. So those are top two. Give us your last of your top three.
Well, OMAC.
Oh, get the hell out of town!
You're actually putting that in your top three, period.
Well, it wasn't a great list of comic books to choose from.
Oh,
I had a lot of bags, but and a lot of buys, but I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the art more than anything on OMAC.
Oh my god.
It was the only book of the bunch that was just batshit crazy.
Well, there is something to say for that.
Hey, I would have to say that you're batshit crazy.
Somebody has cursed before me. Yes! That's awesome! Thank you for coming on, Chris. You can leave now. No, actually,
like Blackhawks.
Hey, I only had it as a buy and a weak buy. But I didn't have it as a bag like OMAC. So, anyways, move on here. Give us your bottom three.
My bottom three, Demon Knights, a book I was looking forward to. Unlike I love the Demon, love him, but this book made no sense whatsoever. None. I hated every character. I personally think the Demon should rhyme and rule. Doesn't.
That was the only thing I liked.
Yeah. I know that's
he's just sitting here
like.
Nodding his head, going, "Chris is really on the mark with this one." Until you said that.
Hey, Chris, is the reason that you like the Demon because he's a Jack Kirby character?
Okay. Yes.
You know, it's cheaper to just get back issues of Jack Kirby. Right? Yes.
Hey, I mean, both Innes and Wagner have had excellent runs on the Demon. I just think he's a hard character to write, and there's a lot of bad versions out there.
I wouldn't
call especially him. When he rhymes.
Excellent runs? All right. Let's move on to your other bottom three. The other two.
Captain Atom.
Yes.
Which, I mean, this book is so amateurish. It's ridiculous. I can't believe they published it.
And
it was
one of the best reviewed books from critics across the board. New York Times, who reviewed it, Christian Science Monitor, who reviewed it, IGN, who reviewed it, all of them were giving it huge.
Yeah, Christian Science Monitor, that's who I go to the comic book advice for.
I'm giving you across the board. When you got New York Times, you got IGN, you got Christian Science Monitor. Regardless, these guys are reviewing it, and were giving it 4 stars, 9 out of 10, things like that. And meanwhile, this is a book that if I had to step on it, first off, I'd make sure to get some poo. And no, actually, I can't think of a good... But I hated it, is what I'm trying to say.
No, it reminded me of a precursor, a Crisis Superman, where they just added a power whenever they needed it. When can he breathe cold? I mean, this character has nothing to do with previous incarnations of Captain Atom. Not the Charlton, not the earlier DC stuff, nothing. It made no sense. The art, I couldn't tell what was going on.
Yeah, I'm not sure he was breathing cold. I think the art just was that crappy. He could have just been, it could have been a thought balloon. And they screwed it up.
Oh, he had some sort of molecular power that froze
stuff.
That's
what pissed me off when I thought, am I reading Captain Atom? or am I kicked in reading Firestorm?
One of the comparisons I heard, which I thought was really interesting, was that, as you know, Captain Atom was the basis for Dr. Manhattan in Watchmen. What they've actually given him are Dr. Manhattan's powers.
Ah. Which, so in other words, what they've given him is Dr. Solar's powers. Fantastic. All right.
And, of course, the third book, let's go on to the Blackhawks, and I thought this was awful. It reminded me of a really bad G.I. Joe. I know Keith compared it to S.H.I.E.L.D., but they stole the writer off of G.I. Joe, so I'm going more that direction, and the vehicles weren't quite as cool as this S.H.I.E.L.D. incarnation.
Okay, okay. Wait. They didn't steal the writer off G.I. Joe. They hired the writer off G.I. Joe. This is a different thing.
Because they wanted to make their own G.I. Joe company.
Well, shut up!
Yes.
G.I. Joe, I will give you, and I conceded this today when someone gave me the G.I. Joe, that G.I. Joe also stupid enough to put their own name on the side of their super secret vehicle.
Good point. Yeah.
So I'll concede that. Maybe it is closer to G.I. Joe.
Yeah. All right. And overall, out of 10, what would you have given it?
Out of 10?
Yeah. The whole lot.
The whole slew.
Hey, the Blackhawks, not a single African. Anyways, no, out of 10, the whole thing.
I'm giving the whole thing a 4. I didn't find a lot to completely burn, but I have trouble burning a single issue of anything. I kind of want to see how some of these develop and if they're. If the ideas are somehow as bad as I think they are.
It's true, Keith.
Like Suicide Squadron, I kind of want to see where that's heading before I go. I found most of these issues, there wasn't a lot of story to actually judge. It was all art and really, really quick reads. There wasn't a lot to really sink your teeth into at all.
I want to ask about a couple of books that we like that generally were shit on. So let me ask you about Superman and Green Arrow.
Oh, well, Green Arrow, that was the only thing saving that one from being the worst book was Captain Atom. I mean, and I believe they had sent the same writer.
No, they and did, actually, yeah.
Yes, they did. They did, but they won't for very long, as it turns out. No.
Well, what did you hate about that Green Arrow? Whereas we all liked that it was an actual relaunch of a character and an interesting take. What was your dislike of it?
My dislike? It wasn't on my Oliver Queen, and I've always
your
loved
Oliver Queen.
Green
it
Arrow.
Wasn't my Oliver Queen either. It was nobody's Oliver Queen.
No, it just didn't resonate with me at all. In fact, it reminded me of the Tron reboot for some reason. It was just, okay, we got this kid, he's a superhero, and running a business. It didn't work.
Tron was a sequel.
All right, and action?
Well,
you mean Superman?
Superman, sorry.
George Perez is Superman.
Superman, yeah.
I'll say this about actually, all the Superman books. It really just feels like they're trying to tie into a movie none of us have ever seen.
That's really well said.
I was like, wow, that came from Chris.
I mean, we're missing the Underoos. until we actually know what the hell is going on, I think this book is impossible to judge. I think they're making a huge mistake with one of their major characters.
Yeah, I want, go ahead.
No, I question the timing of this 52. I don't quite understand why they launched it on us with basically no warning. And why now? They've got nothing to linchpin all this. Flashpoint sort of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and it is interesting that I was listening to some interviews with creators from Flashpoint. They didn't know that this was happening either. They had no idea. I mean, with the exception of Jeff Johns, who did the core.
Can I ask you guys a question?
The ones working on the mini.
Can I ask you guys a question before we go any further? Do any of the editors, now that it's being relaunched, know that it's happened?
Whoever said it in Green Lantern clearly wasn't told.
All right, go ahead, Keith. Continue your
thought. That's the one thing saving the Green Lantern books, though.
That it was completely unaffected by the relaunch?
Exactly.
I hear that any title, if you were following Legion, you were thrilled because, again, there were no changes. Incomprehensible to anyone who wasn't following it.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I'm still not going to be putting it on any purchasing list.
So apparently there are three people out there really happy.
Yeah, all those Legion followers, yeah.
Okay, let's
and let me guess, they probably have names for themselves like Astro Boy or something like that.
Probably.
Legion Buying Lad.
Hey, that is my name. Now you know my username on Xbox, Fies. I want to talk about this, actually. We talked about Superman and the importance of kids reading books before, because we talked about the literacy level and how well you could learn to read. I want to talk about something. I didn't come from a religious family at all. I think a lot of my moral center comes from reading comic books as well as a young child, and other forms of media as well. But I think a character like Superman, the idea that he is no longer the big blue Boy Scout that's supposed to make him more contemporary, the idea to me, though, of everybody looking up to him as that is the ideal of what he's supposed to be, I think influenced me as a great deal as a young child and as my morals and my actions. And I think back to the quote from and I'm losing it now, Busick and Art Ross, Alex Ross. Gentlemen?
Marvels?
No, that would have been, actually that would have been Busick and Wade and Kingdom Come. Thank you. I'm looking back into Kingdom Come, and I think about the quote of the Superman basically saying that you don't always do what's easiest, you do what's right. And so if they're not basing these books to 7-year-olds or younger or anybody under teenage years at all now, do you think that that's kind of something that might be missing? Do you think that the getting morals from comic books and literature and other forms of media actually can be important to the development of people? Brett, why don't you go ahead first?
Well, to be honest, I hope not. I think that some of the media, especially that we're seeing the morals that they're progressing with, I don't agree with, and I certainly don't agree with the vast majority of DCs right now. And I'm a little concerned, I guess, for me, seeing when I see like a volume of religion even entering into comic books, for the most part. But I think that it's one of those cases where, you know, it strikes me as really odd to say that you learn morals from comic books, but
you didn't find that
but
at all.
I suppose that
growing up, you didn't find that idolizing characters that always did what was right and not what was easiest, and that a character like Spider-Man or Superman, these morals, even seeing a character like Batman, who is a character that easily could fall into a universe where he would kill his villains, but he wants to have a higher moral standard and never become like them. You don't think that there's something to that?
Well, there might be something to it, and I think maybe
was something to it for you personally.
I think maybe for me it might have been more of a process of osmosis, perhaps. You know, by the more that I brought in, the more that the overlying themes kind of soaked in. Not so much that I pinpointed it as actually being part of a single character, but perhaps that there was, you know, just the overarching theme that kind of came in.
All right, we're going to talk. Okay, let's move on to Keith's thoughts on this, and then we'll get yours.
Sorry,
Chris, you'll get your. You're going to bring up their end because we need a little comedy at the end. So, Keith, why don't you go ahead?
I'd say it did have an influence on me as a kid, but at the same time, when I was a kid, was when Batman was going through this major change in what type of character he was. Post-crisis, when they did Year One, he became a radically different character in the same way that we're seeing a lot of these other characters changing dramatically. And in general, darker. And I'm not sure that this is the best direction. But yeah, I think I did learn things from characters, sometimes the wrong lessons. My Punisher face certainly didn't teach me the best lessons of forgiveness and the comparative badness of certain crimes. The Punisher's fairly black and white.
Literally, as well as figuratively.
Huh? Anyways.
I'm going to let that sink in. Mo needs to look up some words before I can talk again.
Because he has a black and white costume.
I'm going to defer. I don't entirely agree with Brett. However, I will defer to him in a certain way because he's the only one of us that's a parent. So he's the one that will soon have to make decisions about what material goes in front of his child.
Yeah. And Chris, your thoughts?
I find the question kind of offensive. You're giving credence to seduction of the innocent, the plague that wiped out EC and all that.
Are you on crack?
I wouldn't have.
Oh, that is nothing in it. That is in no way what I'm talking about. What are you?
I really don't think comic books affect the morals of any given human being.
Well, I can tell you this, Chris.
Not.
It affected me. It gave me a person I could find. Like I say, no religion at all in my household. None. A moral center came from seeing media figures where the hero was somebody I idolized. And that could be in Star Wars, it could be in comic books, it could be in books. But it was there for me. It did help me realize what's right and wrong in this world. And that the difference isn't really that hard to make, or hard to tell.
I do not believe that. I just
you don't,
don't
believe what I'm telling you. It's me, Chris. I can tell you what affected me. You didn't believe it affects you, perhaps, and perhaps you don't believe that this will affect and negatively reading these books will make somebody be a killer. I'm not saying that this reading Punisher is going to make you kill books. I am saying, though, that learning morals from these things dates back to fables and to the Grimm, Brothers Grimm and Aesop's Fables and all this stuff for centuries.
It may reinforce stuff that's already there, but I really don't think reading a comic book is going to cause you to, even the worst comic book in the world, it could possibly charge you to go one way or the other. Idolizing the Punisher is not going to make you bad, no more than idolizing Superman is going to make you a Boy Scout. Some of the most evil people I know love freaking the Superman movies, despite the fact that they're awful.
Well, the Superman movies are awful.
Sorry, I meant the last
somebody,
one.
If somebody is like number four, I'll agree that guy's evil.
I was driven to violence after seeing Superman Returns. I'm not sure that was a moral thing though.
That's the one I was talking about. I wasn't talking about the Christopher Reeves.
All right.
Oh, most.
I'm actually just so upset about everything I've seen about this Zack Snyder thing that.
But hold on.
I can't believe how awful that looks.
But he has an armor. That'll be good. Brett.
Yeah, and no underwear. Brett,
that is good. Brett, why don't you? I'm not saying it's good that he's going commando. I'm just saying, anyways. Brett, as the parent, why don't you wrap up everything that me, Keith, and Chris, who was wrong, said.
Well, I think that, one of the things as a parent that I do try to look out for is that I know that I am going to be reading these books along with my son. And I think that any good parent is going to understand what their kids are reading as well. And so I think that if there is something like, granted, I wouldn't let him read most of the new DC books for a long time, but I'm not going to stop him from getting into superheroes. But I also feel like he's going to have a good basis on his moral center, moral values prior to even getting into comic books. It may reinforce what he's learned, but I do believe that he's going to have that going in.
I'm not saying that the importance of a parent doesn't exist, but I am saying that these things are also can be a guide, and they always, like I say, if you look at fables, you look at morals, you look at that there always was these things through storytellers through the end, and there always was a what's it called again at the end when they wrap it up and they give you a moral? I guess they call it a moral.
A moral is what they call it.
They give you a moral at the end.
The more you know.
It was very difficult watching you go through that phase where you were trying to fly and jumping off your roof and stuff like that. But
and then there was the phase when I was reading Cherry Tart. Jerry Bontar. But that's a whole other thing.
He's never left that phase.
No, no, I don't blame him. She was hot. She looked like Betty. Anyways.
My Catwoman suit doesn't fit anymore.
All right, guys. Let's move on to the anything else, Chris, or not Chris, Keith, why don't we move on to any of the other books that we talk about now that we have a parallel, now that you have the burn bag buy list right in front of you. And we're putting this up on our website for everybody to go back and see what we voted on.
Well, between the four of us, once I got Chris's reviews, there were five books of agreement. In the bag pile, we both had Animal Man and All-Star Western. And in the burn pile, we all had Frankenstein, Captain Atom, and Firestorm. So a lot of, a wide range in everything else, but I was a little surprised even that there were that many that all four of us agreed on.
And you had expected OMAC to be in a burn for everybody, but
I had. If I had done odds,
somebody blew it though.
No, we didn't keep these records as we went. So after we did the last show, we just sent this list around and everyone did it. And Mo and I both admitted to having altered a couple of our opinions once everything was done. Mine was that once all four Batmans were out, I decided they should be graded on a curve, which made Dark Knight drop to a burn and Batman by Scott Snyder go up to a bag. One of the few superhero books out of the whole thing that I put in the bag.
I think for me, what happened was that I wound up because there was no ignore, and as I was, especially in that last week that I was so inclined to give, I decided most of those ignore went to the burn side. So at the end of the day, I was burning a lot more books than I was originally.
I believe
that's okay.
I believe you had the most burns by far, but actually, Keith had a lot more burns than me as well on his list. And then who was the most burns after that? Between me and Chris, probably pretty equivalent. A lot of buys, right?
Well, actually, Brett had the most burns. He burned 2/3 of the books, 33.
He's all proud of himself.
Over there. Awesome.
Mo, you actually had almost the same number in the buys. You had 30 in buy, which was your top category. Yeah. Chris and I, though, radically different opinions on individual books, had almost identical numbers. I had 10 bags, 18 buys, 24 burns. Chris had 9 bags, 19 buys, 24 burns. So we were actually only one book off of having
exactly
the same
numbers.
So who had
the most bags then?
I did. I had 10, Chris had 9.
And how many did I have?
You had 7.
And how many burns did I have then? Actually, 15, I guess. So it would be
15, yeah. So if you added bag and buy, Mo was by far ahead. 37 books that you put in the top in the I would continue reading category.
Yeah, I have to say,
Keith, you wrecked Voodoo for me completely with your review. I awesome. Loved the book until you pointed out the fact that this is the world's quietest strip club.
Actually, if anybody,
I've gone back and read it. I can't take the story seriously at all anymore.
Actually, you know what? And it's funny because I actually did want to ask your review of Voodoo because, of the four of us, you've spent more time strip clubs than the other three of us combined. And that, folks, is not an exaggeration or a joke for the show. That's the straight-up truth.
I enjoyed Voodoo, well, until Keith pointed out the obvious problems with it. But the thing I found really amazing about it was the art. It reminded me of a Frank Cho. It was gorgeous. It was clean. It was different than anything else. But yeah, that's all I have to say about it. Once again, we didn't have a lot of story to actually judge.
You know what it needed? It needed a Cheech Marin out front. From
I saw what
you saw. I'm not going to say it, but because Brett's just going to edit it out anyways. But yeah. All right, let's move on, Brett. You have some of the polls that they've taken on the quality of the books and the popularity. Why don't you go on to that?
Okay, well, I think I was really interested with these. Now it's unfortunate because I am grabbing these from Comic Book Resources. And I think it's really unfortunate that they didn't do week four for some odd reason. But it's really skewed the numbers for week three because week three is still available, whereas the other ones are closed. But I think we still get a really interesting concept of what people that think of them. So anyways, for week one, I think that there's probably not much surprise in that Action Comics came in as number one with 24%, almost 25% of the vote for what the people's favorite comic book was. But I'm very happy to note that just below it was Animal Man number one.
Okay. Interesting.
And then Detective Comics was at 10%, which made number three, and just below that, Justice League and Swamp Thing. So I think that there was a pretty good... there's some pretty good books in there, and there's some not so good books because we didn't generally like Action Comics. So to see it right up there at the top is a little bit depressing. But
is that Justice League or JLI?
That's Justice League.
Interesting that it came in so low. It's the the flagship title.
Yeah, JLI came in with it.
Well, yeah, JLI. But sales wise, reorders wise, it's still the
one. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But
of course, this doesn't go by sales figures, so.
Mm-hmm, I know.
This goes by what people voted as their favorite book.
Now,
go ahead.
I'm a little surprised because Justice League International came in at 3.11%, and just slightly above that, for some odd reason, was OMAC.
Well, because Chris voted 75 times.
Hey, I only got two issues.
OMAC has a... It's being talked about a lot on Twitter. It has a loyal following despite no one actually buying the book.
Yeah, there you go. Actually, you know what? That is something else that you have to say when 3.1 say that's the favorite book. If it is number 82 in sales compared to number 10 or something like that, if so few less people have read it, it's 3.1 actually prorates to a higher percentage than that. If you look at it from that perspective as well. So that's kind of interesting. Now, I will say this about Action Comics. I've seen on the message boards, people love it. And it is so popular. And I thought it sucked ass. So just to say, to straight talk, I thought it sucked ass. I'm convinced if you simply took the name George Perez and put it on that book, and put the name Grant Morrison on Superman, and everything else was the exact equivalent, and people didn't know the difference, that they would have voted the opposite, that they really are voting the name. Chris, what do you think on that?
I have to agree with you. Morrison is a draw. He is the number one book with Bat, or he had the number one book beforehand. So, yeah, no, I can't disagree with you there.
Brett?
Well, I think that, I definitely agree. I think it's unfortunate because of the fact that I thought that Perez's writing was so painful that could make a bit of a difference. But obviously they were.
What was it was painful about?
The fact that there was 8 billion words.
Okay. Have you read Nth Man? Because it has seven times as many words. In fact, if you read any book from the early 90s, there's seven times as many, or 80s, 70s, as words as this book. Like I open up the first page of Nth Man after Keith was good enough to lend me it, and I look at it and it's going to take 3.5 hours to read the first panel. There's so many words.
I think it's telling though about that book that all three of us when we did the podcast thought it was an oversized book, and it's not.
There is that.
I meant to issue a correction on that, that it is a regular size book, and yet, oh yeah, that had to be 30 pages. That was, because it took about 3 hours to read it. So yeah, it must have been oversized.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Well, okay.
But as far as your Morrison versus Perez sales things go, I definitely agree that Morrison is the draw. So whichever book he writes is going to get bigger sales.
Okay, well, I still don't understand. I'm going to repeat. He had the dialogue. Rats with money, I'm your worst nightmare. And people are saying this was a great book. On the message boards and whatever, they're like, this was so good. I'm your worst nightmare. Sylvester Stallone called him up with, I got a good idea for a ride. I'm your worst nightmare. You know, like, it's brutal. Brutal. Keith liked my sly impression.
That was impressive.
Are you guys? Keith, I love you.
It was the best De Niro I've ever heard.
Awesome. Okay, go on to the next couple weeks here, Brett. What are the other?
Well, I just want to bring up the worst overall book for week one, and actually worst overall, which was Green Arrow. It got 0.65 of the votes. Like, yeah, it's interesting because the three of us liked it. Chris didn't like it, so he's with those people. But yeah, it's just so,
because it was the most jarring change. In week one, it was the most jarring change, and that's why people didn't like it. I'm convinced of it. It was a major. It wasn't everybody's Oliver Quinn.
There was a major pushback from those who thought the character was far too close to the Smallville version of Green Arrow. That put a lot of people off. But I haven't watched Smallville in 5 years, so it really didn't have any effect.
Exactly,
on me.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Did they change his name to Oliver Quinn?
He did, apparently. That's the rumor.
It's a running joke that only we are going to think is funny.
Oh, no. Some people think it's funny. Chris might think it's funny when he listens back.
Queen. Okay, Queen.
Yes. All right.
Hey. Moving right along.
All right. So in week two, the overwhelming most popular book was Batwoman at almost 25%. The next...
Man.
Yeah, the next book down was at almost 14%, and that was Green Lantern number one. So I think that's really interesting.
That is interesting. People love lesbians.
I hear the trades of Batwoman's run and Detective are flying off the shelves as well, which was by the same artist.
Interesting.
Now here's something though that's going to turn everybody into like crazy raving maniacs like Mo. In the fact that Demon Knights number one and Frankenstein Agent of Shade both made the next two slots with one Demon Knights with almost 13% and Frankenstein with almost 9%.
Really?
Ahead of Batman and Robin by a fair chunk.
I love
and
Demon
Superboy.
Knights, but I'm the one of the four of us, right?
Well, God awful.
And Frank, just a voice out of nowhere.
That's
the voice of God telling us that he hated us.
That's the devil on my right shoulder. And there's also a devil on my left shoulder, though, so go ahead.
Well, Frankenstein comes out of that Morrison run. What was that called? The Seven Soldiers. And, I mean, that has quite a following, but I think it came right at the time that Mo and I were out of reading comics, so we just kind of missed that. I have no connection to this character at all. No interest in them, and that was part of it for me, is that I didn't know why I was reading Frankenstein.
Well, you know, this entire relaunch to me, where you're talking about different continuity and this and that, and some guys are relaunched, and some guys are reboots, and some guys are left alone, and this entire DC 52 felt like the Frankenstein monster to me. And as you know, as far as I'm concerned, everything that DC has to do with Frankenstein absolutely sucks. Hey, you know what was good? Marvel Comics takes on Frankenstein. They had the Ghost of Frankenstein, the furry vest.
Nice. When was that?
Don't remember that in the 70s?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. That was in the 70s.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he had that. Yeah, I remember the furry vest.
Yeah.
They also made an anime of that. I've never seen it. Want to.
You will. All right. What else?
So anyways, the bottom of the worst one from this week was Grifter with 2%. To me, that's no surprise. They didn't do anything for the character, and it's not a very good book. But for one that Keith and I liked especially, and put right near the top of our piles overall, Deathstroke got 2.37%.
Ah, told you they made him too powerful.
So.
I wasn't saying he wasn't. Did I mention this when I said that?
I don't know if you corrected this yet.
I said he wasn't before. I said he was like the equivalent of Captain America. He was a super soldier, an nth man, so to speak, the nth level. I guess he had, prior to this relaunch, he had the strength of about 10 men. He was a metahuman. And the strength of about 10 men. It's just to me that my point was that now he felt like he could go toe-to-toe with Wonder Woman, you know, in the strength department and the power department. That's that that he just felt like that's what pissed me off about it. So I just want to get that out, though. I didn't I knew that. I didn't convey that properly. Keith, go ahead.
Deathstroke Deathstroke was around the middle of the numbers as far as sales went. I really liked the book because I thought it was a relaunch. It didn't throw away anything. It started from a fresh story. Batwoman, there's been so much anticipation. Batwoman would have been one of the top books of the year without this relaunch. It's been sitting on the shelf. You know, the number zero came out almost a year ago. The Greg Rucka run with the same artist was almost 2 years ago now. This was going to be the hot book of the spring.
Hot lesbian action.
That's right. There's a preview. There's preview pages of this, of the number one of Batwoman, in the number zero that came out last November. This has been sitting for so long. I am curious what it's going to look like after they get back to new pages. It's a bit like a pilot for a TV show that doesn't get picked up and then gets picked up 6 months later, and you've got to reassemble all your team.
Okay, Chris, what do you think of the those stats on the week two about what was popular and what was unpopular?
Deathstroke has always had a fan base, so it doesn't surprise me.
That they
pissed
it off.
And Batwoman, once again,
wait.
A lot of the old school fans.
Chris, the stats said that Deathstroke was very poorly received. You say it has a fan base, so what do you mean by that?
It was god awful.
Oh, they pissed off the fan base.
Well, not god awful.
Okay.
Yeah, pissed off the fan base.
Okay.
Where people are going to go vote. And Batwoman people were waiting for, so.
Yeah, see, Keith and I weren't part of the fan base, so perhaps that's why we did like it.
Yes.
All right, week three, Brett.
All right, so week three, I'm actually going to start at the bottom because I know that the top's going to piss some people off. But, so the bottom with just slightly over 1% of the vote is the atrocious DC Universe Presents. And also down at the bottom is Blue Beetle number one, you know, in Legion of Superheroes. So, I mean, I don't think there's any real surprise there. Those books didn't, I don't know that Legion's been a good seller for a fair length of time, and I don't think that Blue Beetle or DC Universe Presents really interest anybody. And also with just over 1%, Captain Atom, so Bo can be happy about
yes.
that. Actually, everybody can be happy about that, because that one doesn't deserve it.
Everybody burned that book. That stupid book.
And I'm also pleased that Catwoman only got 2.85% of the vote. I think that that's good because I think it's one of the problems with where DC is going. And so to say that that only got 2.85, I think kind of renews my faith in the comic fan.
It's time for Chris to weigh in though, because Chris is at Chris's list. Bag.
I liked it.
he's one horny bag.
Chris likes strip clubs and boobies, so
that's true.
Yeah. With the exception of the last page, I was all in.
He was disappointed that the costume stayed
on. No, and in the last page, Batman was all in. Boom.
Yeah. No, as soon as Batman showed up, it sort of went awry, but I kind of liked the direction. I thought it was neat when we had this character that was ready to pick up everything, like, not even grab her clothes, grab her cats, and be out of there without too much emotional attachment. I thought it was a fresh take on Catwoman, and I'm interested in seeing where it's going. Although it did sort of feel like the ultimate Catwoman rather than Catwoman.
I'm hoping next issue, I'm really hoping next issue, is the plot line is Catwoman attempting to get a morning after pill.
Oh, you just don't like other people having sex.
Yeah, that's true, unless I get to watch. And I did, and I still didn't like it. Brett?
Come on, Mo gets as much imaginary sex as Catwoman.
Oddly enough, he gets a fair share of it with Catwoman.
Nice.
All right, so anyways, the top three books, starting from the bottom. Wonder Woman number one with 15.5%. I think, again, that's a big one of those. Brian Azzarello is supposed to be so goddamn good, so we're gonna like this book.
Oh yeah, I think you're right. We already covered that though. What did? I'm not even asking you, Chris. You don't tell me, Keith. What did Chris say about Wonder Woman?
He's got Wonder Woman as a bi.
Okay. All right. I can live with that.
Which is the same as Brett had also given it.
All right. I can live with that.
That's right. And again, I did it completely because of the Brian Azzarello factor.
All right.
Number two was Batman at 21.82%. So finally a good book in that top. But really the number one book, and this just shocks the absolute hell out of me, with 26.54, over 5,000 votes, by far the highest voted book overall, Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
The market has spoken.
And I'm just actually kind of wondering, like, were people, like, goofing on this list? Is that why, like,
yeah, hey, let's vote the Red Hood? They were goofing on the list. That's got to be it. Or the people, the same people that read, they just find Starfire hotter than Catwoman. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, maybe there's a bunch of people out there who are saying, you know, Starfire, a slut, awesome. That's totally how I pictured that character.
Yeah, that's great.
You know what that is? That's the massive fan base for Jason Todd-related material. Those folks just desperate for any new tale of Jason Todd.
You know what? And Jason Todd was desperate for the new tale of Starfire. Get it? See what I did there, Brett? You see that? You get that? Chris, your thoughts on Red Hood and the Outlaws?
I have nothing to say on that, man. That doesn't even make sense. It does not compute.
Excellent.
It was awful?
It was awful. All right. Keith, you had some quotes and stuff you wanted to say from creators and some things to look back in here that you want to bring in. So let's go to that.
Well, there was two things I was very curious about, and it was the original promises of this reboot, or this relaunch it was supposed to be. And one of them actually ties to what Brett was just saying about where Legion was in his popularities. Now, Dan DiDio had been quite clear.
What's his name?
That Dan DiDio.
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 I'm a Fudd spirit. DiDio. DiDio. The guy, was it?
One of the things he said in passing.
Wait, just one question. There was a term that was used on Twitter that you retweeted and I've used as well, describing this thing. What was it? It was a...
Didiotic.
Didiotic. Thank you. Thank you.
One of the things that he made quite clear was, he was making no bones about it, the higher the sales, the fewer the changes going into this. Green Lantern and Batman almost untouched by this relaunch. Green Lantern most of all. How on earth did Legion make it through this with so few changes if it was purely based on sales and the fan base, of the purchasing fan base, I should say?
Well, those three people really liked it.
I know Geoff Johns is a big fan. He was around for the last relaunch, and maybe that's the case, is that it was relaunched too recently. It gets rebooted about twice as much as any other.
Once every five years, once instead of once every 10.
Perhaps I think Wonder Woman might get relaunched a little bit more often than Legion, but...
Yeah, it happens often, too.
Perhaps Legion has a good lobbying group.
That may be Geoff Johns. That may explain everything. Because he was in charge of the relaunch, and he thought he was doing great work. So
mm-hmm.
He was very fond of what he was what he had planned.
Really? I feel like that about this about me on this podcast.
Now, Chris, we've talked about this among ourselves quite frequently, but I'm looking at Dan DiDio's June 1st announcement. When they first announced that they were going to do this relaunch, the phrase that's in this announcement is, not only will this initiative be compelling for existing readers, it'll give new readers a precise entry point into our titles. Now, what's your take, having read all of them? We've gone on record already.
Well, yeah, Chris, Chris, I just want to ask first off, how frequently, what were you reading DC-related over the last couple of years, leading into this as well? So go ahead.
Leading into this, I was on the Bat Books, and I was on Green Lantern.
Okay. So, okay.
Although I stopped Green Lantern right before Brightest Day.
Okay. So anyways, Keith, what was your question again? I'm sorry. So you're just looking, wondering where Chris was on the jump on point?
Yeah, the precise entry point was his exact words.
Well, actually, I think that comment's remarkably precise, except not in the way you thought it was when you originally heard it. Yes, it is great for existing readers if you're reading Green Lantern. Other than that, it is a jump-off point for every other book.
And I had a moment, I texted Mo a couple weeks ago when Mo and I had a talk. Well, after about a week and a half ago, Dan DiDio said a thing in passing on Facebook.
What's his name?
That's Dan DiDio. He said, there are no crisis events in the new DCU, that no event named Crisis ever happened. And he walked it back a little bit afterward and said, there have been no crisis in our characters' lives. There have been crisis in our characters' lives, but they aren't exactly the crisis you read before. They can't be. And obviously people got very upset at the idea they were throwing out, you know, four major events that have happened over the past 25 years. And he walked it back a little bit. I'm disappointed that he doesn't know the plural crisis. But I texted Mo about this, so we went back and forth. And I said, you know, ultimately, what upsets me most is that one person told me months ago how this was going to go, and that was Chris, that had said, this is the perfect jump-off point.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I am done with the Batman. I love being done with the Morrison Batman.
Well, he's back soon.
That's the thing.
Oh, yeah, but I don't have to jump on again.
That's true. But that is interesting to me that they're Batman. They really didn't change anything. There's still all the different. There's still Damian. There's still the four Batmans. They really didn't change anything. But Batman Inc. is gone. But it's going to return. Oh, thank God.
Not only return, but finish off its original run. It's not relaunching right away. They'll still publish the final issues of its original volume and then restart it in 2012 as season two.
Okay, now, Brett, as somebody who really isn't who's more of a Marvel guy, who really isn't a DC guy, when you hear that these events that you really probably didn't read anyways never existed, does it help you as a jump-on point? Does it give you a different perspective on this whole thing?
No. I think it's because, again, that they're, like, for me, ultimately what I want is a complete and utter reboot, you know, so that I know exactly what's going on. And, again, as we've covered before, since they're half of them are good as they are, half of them are somewhat reboots, you know, there's no real rhyme or reason to it. So I think that for me it kind of pisses me off because it's not even giving the fans of those books before their due in that, okay, all this stuff happened, we're going to find a great place to end it, and we're going to, like, just kind of restart it with what we want. It's just kind of saying, no, you know, who cares? We don't need some of that stuff. We like some of this stuff. You know, okay, we'll just do a little bit of this. And so it's a mess.
As the guy who was the heaviest DC reader going into this, I actually don't mind what Didio said. If he told us now what the new events are, if there was storylines or a timeline again, because one doesn't exist. They just haven't made it available to us. So why is it you're sitting there going, we don't want to confuse our creators when they're creating this, but it's okay to confuse our fans by not providing them with the same list of timeline? Because they say it exists, but I think they're lying. I honestly believe they're lying or something. So, yeah, I mean, whatever they're doing, that's fine. But you have to tell me where I sit and what I should know, because you reference things like Superman's death. So I have to know, okay, if he died, but he didn't die by doomsday, I need to know that. Whatever has happened just needs to be, there needs to be a structure there for the fans as well as for the the creators. I was going to bring up something, but because a text that I had given to Keith that I said he should put on Twitter and go to Didio or Didio. By the way, Keith wants to say something, so I'll let him jump in. But first, I'm just wondering, what is it, Dan Didio?
Didio.
Okay. I'm just wondering, Keith and Brett, as the two married fellows in the group, have you ever used a Didio on your wife for foreplay? All right. Keith, go ahead. You have something you want to jump in on.
Not anymore.
You have derailed my choo-choo train of thought. Now DC has done reboots before, and each time, the two biggest that they've done, Crisis on Infinite Earths was immediately followed by the History of the DC Universe that gave us this guide with no real details, just JSA's is in World War II and Superman's, 7 or 8 years ago or whatever. And then Zero Hour was the first kind of, call it a warm reboot, because they didn't reset everything, but they reset some stuff that just wasn't working. And again, at the back of the final book was a new timeline of how it worked now. That's what I want. It doesn't have to be a super complicated, tell me every piece that happens and didn't happen. Zero Hour said there was a crisis, and that's when the first Dove died. And that's when a few other characters died, and I didn't need any more detail than that. I just wanted a little bit of a grounding and a place to stand. What Mo was saying about how the creators don't seem to have this nailed either. I mean, DiZio made this statement, and then immediately myself and many others within seconds were, but in Hawk and Dove, they tell you that a crisis happened, and it was a big deal, and Dove died. So you've already, I'm not even looking for continuity that fits with 10 years ago or 5 years ago. I'm looking for continuity that exists from the first week of the relaunch. I'd like them to be, and I have got a correction I want to throw in here. This is a perfect spot to put it. I was quoting a USA Today article a few podcasts back, and I need to correct it. And this will, your new 52 headache will kick right back in when I tell you this. Detective Comics, the one that with the Joker in it, is set in the present day. It was,
first appearance of the Joker?
He has apparently not fought the Joker that many times. So again, we have something that's not internally consistent with another book that came out the same day. That the Joker that had done the Killing Joke that is referenced in Batgirl, that detective came out the same day, and it just doesn't seem to be the same character.
Oh, man. Chris, you're the guy who hasn't weighed in on continuity as of yet, so why don't you just throw your two cents in here?
I mean, the continuity between the books is non-existent. I've been kind of hoping that with the second or third issues we sort of get a sense of the universe, but I sort of formed lines in my head that, okay, we now have a Green Lantern universe and Catwoman and Birds of Prey. We now have an ultimate universe where everything's just sort of stylized and cool. The books don't hold together on a whole, and I have no idea where to put JLA Dark or Justice League Dark, where that's taking place. It certainly does not seem the same world as I Vampire or any of the other horror books.
And maybe they'd be better off going in the direction that Marvel really has, where there's the Avengers family, Spider-Man family, and X-Men family, and only on very rare occasions do the crossovers mingle within those worlds. You can have these gigantic things happening, Spider-Island, that Avengers will, Avengers and X-Men, which take place in similar cities, will just skip.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the DC would be better off doing that instead of the giant world-shattering crossovers like they've been
doing.
It seems at times
that that's what they want to do, and at times it isn't, What were you going to say, Chris?
I mean, DC invented the DC conference when all the Superman writers would go out to a retreat and sort of work all this out beforehand. That obviously did not happen with this relaunch.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
They should have some sort of retreat where they actually work out some of the differences.
Hey, I'm sure Grant Morrison sat down with himself and decided what he was going
to
do.
Yeah, he did, and then he didn't bother telling anybody else. I'm just going to finish off this on this continuity. This is the tweet that from the text I sent Keith that he put up to Didio. Continuity is what gives characters history, which is what gives them depth, which is what gives them life. So that kind of sums up how I feel personally. Let's move on here. Now that we're this far in, did you have any other news items here on creators or anything like that that are changing that we haven't covered yet there, Keith? Or
I do. Just announced, or will be announced at the top of the week, Andy Cooper is doing two issues of Action Comics, which will be a Legion of Superheroes story. Again, still taking place in the 5 years back timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And George Perez will be leaving Action Comics as a writer. He's supposed to still be staying on as an inker, but Keith Giffen and Dan Jurgens, who seem to be the cleanup crew, they seem to be hanging around waiting to take over books.
Is Jurgens the new Demetaeus?
Jurgens will be penciling and co-writing.
You know, Giffen Demetaeus, is that how you pronounce the name? Didio? How do you pronounce it?
It's a closest guess that I've got.
Yeah, well, anyways, he and Giffen were, tied to the hip for a while, and it seems now that that's Jurgens.
With McGuire.
Yeah, with McGuire.
Well, Giffen used to work with, Giffen has plotted a lot, but often used scripters, because he used the beer bombs on Legion of Superheroes as well. And Gerald Jones on JLE.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fairly common for him to use someone to write the actual dialogue while he plotted.
Okay. What do you think of the announcement of Perez leaving and those guys taking over, Brett?
Well, I'm really happy. Again, I don't feel like Perez is a very good writer. So I think that anybody's found to be a step up. I'm just not that excited for the Superman and the way the books are. Now, that being said, I did read Action Comics number 2, and I wasn't as I didn't hate it nearly as much as Action Comics number 1.
I resisted reading. I almost read some of the number 2 issues. I kind of looked at them and went, I'm not doing it, and I walked away. Chris, what do you think about a lot of people I've heard saying now, why should I bother reading these first issues with Perez then if they're just going to change creators anyways? What do you think of them changing so quickly into the new 52? Do you think it's just inevitable when not everything comes out?
I think they shouldn't fire anybody, no matter how bad a book is, after the first issue. It's just kind of ridiculous what they're doing.
What about if we fired Liefeld after the first issue? Brett, Brett just wants to jump
in. Well, they shouldn't have hired him in the first place.
That's true. Brett has something he just wants to jump in quickly on that. What are you going to say?
I do want to mention that in the case of Perez, he's not fired. He's actually leaving the book.
Oh, okay. Okay.
From what I understand, he made the decision to leave it.
It's probably internal pressure.
He wasn't let go from it.
Internal pressure? No? All right, Chris, go ahead. What were you saying?
No, I mean, I just think it's sad that we have a creator leaving after such a short amount of time. It's really quite silly what's going on. I mean, if he was not going to stay for a long run or at least 5 or 6 issues, maybe we shouldn't have had this first one published.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially on a high profile book like this.
Yes, that's actually interesting.
It's sloppy editing. You can't keep a guy around for a couple
issues.
In the
new 52?
Yeah, in the new 52,
Now, again, I mean, he is doing 6 issues.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is that the number one thing for me that I just think is that if you're going to do Superman, I definitely agree that you should bring on somebody who is completely 100% dedicated to attempting to do a full, massive story arc. So who is willing to stick it out for years. They might not last it for those years, but willing to try.
Okay, I'm going to get Brett. Give me a guess on George Perez's age.
56.
Keith? Guess?
I'm going to go with 61.
Chris, your guess?
54.
Okay, I would have had him close to like 68, late 60s. He's 57, so I'm guessing he's not retiring. So who knows his reason for leaving. He's not that old. All right, but...
Well, I read somewhere that somebody thought that he was going back to the stage, that he does work on the stage now. I can't confirm that in any way, shape, or form, but if that's true, then that's interesting.
Now, I know this. All of us, even if we're not a fan of his writing, all of us love his penciling, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Nobody does rubble like Perez.
I love his pencils. I absolutely love it.
That's
I'm so hopeful that this opens them up to do a new history of the DC universe.
That'd be awesome. And with Wolfman writing it? Well, just read that one again. Anyways, let's move on here. I don't think we're going to have time to cover really anything on Marvel unless there's some news items that you guys think are hitting. But we do have one last DC 52 topic to talk still. So go ahead first, Keith. Of course, you always got something sitting there in your news desk. That's why you're Cub Recorder K at Twitter. He's Cub
Absolutely. Recorder
K,
I'm bringing
K on Twitter. Brett is Brett _ We Talk on Twitter. I'm Mo, M-O, no E, _ We Talk on Twitter. Keith? Go ahead, because I don't think Chris has a Twitter account that's public.
This was after 5 weeks of the biggest freakout of the week always being something New 52 related. This week, Marvel got to have its freakout of the week. They got to own it again. They have announced that Avenging Spider-Man, which is a new title that will launch the tail end of this year, will be packaged for no extra price with a digital code inserted for in the print copies.
Perfect.
So you'll be able to get Avenging Spider-Man, the hard copy, and the digital copy for one price.
Perfect. That's awesome. Yay.
Now, and it's interesting. It's interesting that we had actually been talking about this as what should happen, but immediately people that are current comic dealers freaked out. They went to Twitter en masse to complain about Marvel marketing digital comics to their print clientele. And some have gone as far as to say that they will not be stocking the book on the shelves, that they will be buying it for file copies only, file customers only. Others have considered opening them and taking the digital card out.
Wow. I never thought of that fallout.
So what we thought was a great idea.
I never thought of that fallout.
There's pushback. There's some serious pushback.
Chris, your thoughts?
I can definitely see the retailer's point of view, but I really like the idea of being able to have a digital copy and a hard copy. So I'm with Marvel on this one.
Brett?
I think for me, one of the things that it really speaks to how some of the retailers are kind of stuck in the Stone Age, because I think that as we're seeing with digital comic books, we've talked about how they are, to a certain degree, the future. And I think that when retailers show the desire to stop that, it's almost like they're ostriches burying their head in the sand and not willing to, you know, find a new way to make their business viable, as opposed to, you know, like just crying foul and saying, oh, Marvel, you're trying to kill our business, when Marvel is just trying to, I think this is a way to help their business. Because I think that for me, maybe I buy digital copies, but now I can say to myself, yes, I'm going to go buy that print copy too, and I will go to that comic book store as opposed to just online.
It seems to me like they're going to alienate the fans. They're not, these aren't print fans who are all of a sudden going to be, are being marketed to. These are comic book buying fans who are aware of the changes that are occurring in the industry. You can see that by their awareness in social media. And that, if anything, the stores, if they take out these books, they take out the digital or refuse to stock them on the shelves, the person who's going to be alienated the most are the stores to their own fans who are just going to leave quicker to go to the digital.
Well, and it's interesting to me that it abandons the central premise of having print copies to begin with. Because what these stores are saying is, oh my God, if a customer of mine gets to see a digital comic, they're gone. They're just buying nothing but digital from then on. But the whole argument for print copies is that they are intrinsically better or a different experience than the digital. This is an argument that the print copy is inherently worse.
Interesting. Either thoughts from either Brett or Chris on this? Any last thoughts? Any last wrap-up thoughts from all three of you? I mean, I will say this. It's inevitable no matter what. Like women being allowed to vote, they may not have liked it, but it was inevitable. So was digital comics. Okay. Well, then I guess that's probably about it. Then we might as well wrap up. Go OUT. One last time, I'm Mo_WeTalk on Twitter. Keith, you are?
Cub Reporter K on Twitter.
Brett?
Brett_WeTalk.
Okay, and Brett, your email?
Brett@WeTalkPodcast.com.
Keith?
Keith at WeTalkPodcast.com.
Yes, and folks, see if you can figure this one out. I'm Mo, M-O, at WeTalkPodcast.com. And Chris, your email, and I guess you don't have a Twitter, but anything else you want to plug, you get the final word on the OUT today.
I'm Chris at Chris@WeTalkPodcast.com. We're done.
D-U-N.
E. E. Good night, folks.
Bounce. Isn't that Dune?
We're done.
Well done. We're well done.